Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Did you know the average American child spends more than 7 hours a day looking at a video game, a computer, a cell phone, or a television? In fact, by the age of seven, kids will have spent one full year of 24-hour days watching some type of media screen. And in this digital age of ours, kids seem to be interacting more and more with technology than with their friends or their parents. And moms and dads, you know this, you've got to compete with all kinds of screen entertainment to get your kids to do even simple things like homework or sit down to dinner with the family, to exercise, even to talk, even to have a conversation. That same technology that has improved our lives in so many ways has the potential to hinder our kids emotionally and intellectually and to create some really significant communication barriers. So how is a growing child supposed to learn about relationships and responsibility when the vast majority of their time is spent in front of some type of mobile device? Well, today we'll be talking to an author who has some practical advice for you, Mom and Dad, about this very issue. Her name is Arlene Pelicane, and she's written a great book called Growing Up Social. And we're going to be joined by Arlene in just a few minutes. If this has been an issue at your house, or maybe you're a grandparent and your adult children have been saying, yeah, boy, we're struggling with that in our home. Or maybe you're a teacher and you've noticed that kids just don't seem to pay attention to words anymore or want to read books anymore. Well, Arlene has really, along with Gary Chapman, has spent a lot of time researching this, and she really has some wonderful counsel for all of us, and she'll be joining us here in just a few minutes on the Faith Radio Network. I wanted to start off this morning with a story that really made me smile when I heard it. It's about a little three-year-old disabled girl. Her name is Ruth Evelyn Prank, and Ruth Evelyn is from St. Paul, and she was born without arms. And this past week, Ruth Evelyn got to meet somebody just like her, a woman who has the exact same disability and happens to be the first ever armless pilot. Ruth Evelyn met Jessica Cox, who is a motivational speaker born without arms. And she met her at the premiere of a new documentary called Right Footed. And this documentary tells the story of how Jessica overcame adversity to become an accomplished martial artist, an airplane pilot, and an advocate for the disabled. And here's what happened. Ruthie's mom first learned about Jessica, the armless pilot, when she found out at about 20 weeks of gestation, about 20 weeks into her pregnancy, she found out that her daughter was going to be born without arms. Can you imagine the impact that would have on a parent? Other than that, Ruthie is perfectly healthy, but she has no arms. So Ruthie's mom, Carlin, connected with this pilot, Jessica, on Facebook, and that led to them meeting at this documentary premiere and a wonderful photo, which you can find online, of Ruthie and Jessica sharing a hug. And Jessica says, the top question I get from people is, how do you hug? And she says, this picture clearly shows you don't need arms to embrace someone. It was special. We could feel the same mutual feeling. What a hug is without arms. Wow. Ruthie's mom drove 6 hours to meet Jessica, and actually Jessica showed little Ruthie her airplane. And Jessica's mom says she really hopes, or Ruthie's mom says she really hopes that Jessica will motivate little Ruthie to, you know, overcome any problem, any disability in life, and to be able to adapt. And man, what a great, what an incredible role model. I want to see this documentary. You can find out more information about Jessica's life by going to the website rightfootedmovie.com, rightfootedmovie.com. Again, it tells how she was born with that same disability and has become, you know, an expert in martial arts and an airplane pilot. So just what a heartwarming story. What a beautiful story. I'd encourage you, I'm hoping and praying that that film will come here to the Twin Cities, or maybe to the city that you are listening to Faith Radio in today. Well, I found some other items in the news this week that interested me, and I thought they might interest you as well. How are you at self-control? You find yourself craving a big bowl of chocolate ice cream right around 9 o'clock at night. I did last night, I have to admit. Well, if you do you give in to your cravings? There may be a way to actually bolster your willpower, and believe it or not, it starts with a good night's sleep, something I rarely get. A professor at Clemson University looked at all the research on self-control and reviewed it, and she found that sleep appears to be the key to resisting temptation. Her name is Dr. June Pilcher, and she says sleep is one of the major ways that we reset our resources for self-control. What she did is she looked at all the research on willpower and on sleep habits, and she found evidence that people who sleep well have better self-control. And, of course, we all know self-control is one of the fruits of the Spirit, right? As is patience and kindness and gentleness and all those things, which are a little harder when you haven't had a good night's sleep. I will personally testify to that. So here's the deal. Dr. Pilcher says we only have a finite reserve of willpower, and it could be that getting the proper amount of sleep keeps that reserve supplied. And so she says often it comes down to what time of day or night we're faced with temptation. Dr. Pilcher says it's pretty simple. Don't make big choices late at night. She says at that point in the day, we're overreacting to everything. Now, Dr. Pilcher recommends that if you are one of these people that has a tough time with self-control, with resisting temptation, you should keep a regular sleep schedule, going to bed and waking up at the same time every day. We've heard that a million times, but I was thinking, you know, it was more to physical health, not to resisting temptation. And then she says also don't make big decisions when you're tired. I love this quote from Dr. Pilcher. When you are sleep deprived, be careful about what kind of choices you are making and what kind of people you are interacting with. Ooh, boy. What is that proverb? A companion of fools will suffer harm. I think that's kind of what she's saying there in a roundabout way. Bad company corrupts good character. So yes, if you have trouble with self-control, don't be around folks that are encouraging you to do stuff you shouldn't be doing in the evening, because chances are it ain't going to end up so well for you. Well, it's 13 minutes past 11, and this is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. Coming up next, my guest, Arlene Pelicane, as we talk about growing up social here on the Faith Radio Network.
Continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
Hey, and write that number down because you might have a question for our guest this hour. 877-93-FAITH is the number. Also, the other thing I should mention is that if you call us with your contact info here in the next 40 minutes or so, we'll put you into a drawing for a copy. We've got five copies of the book that Arlene has co-authored with Gary Chapman, Growing Up Social, and we'll be giving those away at the end of the hour. So call us in the next 40 minutes, 877-93-FAITH. Give us your contact info and get into that drawing. We'd love to have you join us. By the way, I want to say hi to the wonderful folks who are listening in Fargo, Moorhead today on Faith 1200. Also, if you are listening on Faith 1090 in Waterloo, Iowa, thanks for joining us. And maybe you've tuned in on Faith 1190 in Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks for taking Faith Radio with you today. Well, our guest, Arlene Pelicane, is a speaker and author from San Diego. Some of her books include 31 Days to a Happy Husband and 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife and 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Mom. Kind of a little theme going there. She's been featured on The Today Show, TLC's Homemade Simple, The 700 Club, Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah, and Family Life Today. Before becoming a stay-at-home mom and author, Arlene worked as the associate producer for Turning Point Television. She earned her BA from Biola University and her master's in journalism from Regent University. You can find out more about Arlene at her website, which is arlenepelicane.com, spelled just like it sounds, P-E-P-E-L-L-I-C-A-N-E, Pelicane. Today, she's going to join us to dive into her new book, co-authored with Dr. Gary Chapman, called Growing Up Social, Raising Relational Kids in a Screen-Driven World. And Arlene, welcome to Faith Radio.
It's great to be with you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you spending time with us today. And before we get into the new book, I should point out that yesterday you were heard across the nation and right here on Faith Radio as a guest on Focus on the Family. How did you like hanging out with my old friend Jim Daly?
That he is a crack up. You know, you listen so often on the radio and you hear these people and you like them and you feel like they are your friends. And you meet them, and it's just, he is larger than life. He is so jovial. And what was so cute was, you know, I had my kids with me and my husband, and they went in to meet and greet. And I thought, you know, this is going to be like this one-minute deal. And they just talked and talked and talked and laughed and laughed and laughed. So all my kids are like, Jim Daly and John Fuller, they're our new best friends. You know,
they are so great men.
Yeah.
Now, some of our listeners know that I worked for Focus for several years, and I happen to know that when an author appears on Focus on the Family, some very interesting things happen. Have you been hearing from old friends that you have not heard from in years?
Yes, you kind of get the it's really sweet because, you know, you just don't know who's going to be in the car, who's going to be on their commute, you know, and they're listening to this. And you know, you'll get these texts and these, and, you know, and this is a positive way social media is used. You know, people from years ago, they'll say, I was in the car and I heard your voice, you know, so that is fun.
That is so neat. Now, on the Focus on the Family broadcast, you actually talked about one of your other books, and since you've got the 31-day concept going, which one did you talk about with Jim yesterday?
We talked about 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife. And that one is really about, you know, sometimes in marriage we're looking at the other person thinking, okay, you're not really measuring up and I'm not very happy right now. Mm. And this one is about, okay, wait a minute, regardless of my job, my kids, my husband, my life, what am I bringing to the table to bring joy into this marriage, into enjoying being grateful for being a wife? So that's what that one is about.
Now, I'm sure you got some great response, and I know you got to watch those Amazon numbers the next couple of days, Arlene, because you know what's going to happen there.
That's great. That's great.
Now, how did you come up with the 31-day concept? I mean, can you really make positive changes in your life and your family in just 31 days? I mean, doesn't it take at least 32? Come on.
You know, if you can get to 31, you are in good shape. And, you know, whether it's growing up social, talking about your digital life and your kids, or you are trying to lose 5 pounds, or you're trying to be nicer to your spouse, sometimes if you think, I have to do this for the rest of my life, it's too much. But if you say, for 31 days, I am really going to prayerfully consider changing this one habit. And if you do that, and you build up that muscle for 31 days, you'll find that on day 32, well, that wasn't as hard to spend my first 5 minutes in the Bible or whatever it is that you're trying to change. So I know a woman, I met her just at a conference last weekend, who said by day 10 of reading the book, 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife, her husband had asked her, what is wrong with you? What's going on with you?
Wow.
Because you are different, you know. So it's good to know it doesn't take that much time and you can make some pretty neat changes.
Have you heard, as you go out and speak to women and to men, obviously, have you heard some reports of people saying, but, you know, this, I didn't think it was going to work. And I thought, 31 days, come on.
Yes.
That's ridiculous. And like this lady, they actually are saying, how about the Happy Mom book? Have you heard moms say, I was flustered, I was frustrated, I was at the end of my rope, and I tried some of these things and they've worked for me.
That is the most exciting thing for an author when they read that, oh, you read this and it helped you. That's like the best thing. And, you know, the 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Mom book is so needed because so many moms are reporting. Barna says that 8 out of 10 moms are reporting that they are extremely stressed. And so I really want to come and say, hey, you can do this, and what can we do to alleviate some stress? Are there some things that we can change that we're just kind of doing over and over that is, you know, insanity, something we can change? And the book actually comes out August 1st, which happens to be today. So 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Mom, and I have an advanced team of moms who have been reading it and such. And from that team, one of the nicest things I heard was a mom with 4 boys, and they're all young, and she said, you know what, I'm still as busy as I was before, but now my kids report I have a happy mom.
Wow.
And so much of it is our attitude, you know, like we have to do the dishes, we have to do the laundry, we have to run around, regardless of what our attitude is, we have to do these things. So what if we could flip this switch in our mind and our heart and smile while we're doing these things instead of like, everybody in the car now? You know, so.
Well, that sounds just strangely familiar in my family.
Yes, it certainly does to my life as well.
How old are your kids, Arlene?
I have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Well, I saw a photo on your website of your family, and you've just got a beautiful family. What's your husband do for a living?
My husband is a realtor, and he also is a pastor. So he's been an interim pastor at different places and stages of his life, and he is a realtor. So he's fabulous. Yeah.
Wow. Now, you used to work for Dr. David Jeremiah, as I mentioned.
Yeah. Let me see if I can do
right.
Dr. David's voice. I'm going to preach now from the book of Romans.
Oh, you're a little close. You're a little close.
What was that like for you?
What a blessing. Their ministry, Turning Point, is just top-notch from every single person at every single desk. So to be able to be with Dr. Jeremiah, to be a part of that ministry, is just amazing. So I can't say enough good things about him, his family, and the way they run their ministry.
Well, that is beautiful. It's always wonderful to hear that, you know, when you got somebody on the inside.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, in today's world, sometimes Christian ministries aren't run like we would like them to be run.
Yes.
And what a blessing. And I am going to work on my voice there. I've got a little bit of laryngitis, but I'm going to work on David's voice this week. I'll eat some extra
Wheaties. You have a very good radio voice, as it is.
we'll see if I can get that down. Okay, so let's dive into the new book. Again, the title is Growing Up Social. You co-authored this with Dr. Gary Chapman, the Love Languages dude. Do you believe technology, just in general, because there, you know, there's so many great things about technology, and there's also some troubling things. Mm-hmm. From a family perspective, do you think, as you survey the landscape, do you believe technology is actually bringing families closer together, or is it driving them apart?
For sure, it is driving people apart. So, of course, there are those uses. You know, I get to Skype Daddy, who is, you know, away on business for 3 months, and I can see him. That's great. So it's a great use of technology. You are in touch with you can be with your family members when you're out of town. But on a day-to-day basis, in most homes in America, technology is segmenting us. We already have very limited time together as a family. So parents are at work, kids are at school, et cetera. Even for the homeschooling family, you know, you're busy, you're working, you're doing these different things. And then when it's the evening time and you have your time together, mom is looking at her social media, dad's watching sports, the kids are playing video games, they're maybe doing some homework online, and everybody is alone in the same house with their little screen. And we've become so used to being with our screen that when we're in a car, restaurant, even vacation, everyone's still segmented, and it takes something, you know, someone's got to say, wait a minute, put everything down, let's spend time together, where that used to be much easier to accomplish because these screens weren't there. They weren't so part of the fabric of our lives. So I think for the most part, we buy the big screen TV because we think, oh, our family's going to sit in front of it and pop popcorn and have Friday night movie night. It's going to be glorious. And that might happen once every 4 weeks. But the rest of the time, the flat screen is used for, you know, someone's watching something, someone else walks in, oh, I don't really want to watch that. They go to their room, they watch whatever they want. And it tends to be something that's separating us instead of something that's bringing us together. You can look around at a restaurant today, right, and it just takes 2 minutes to say, why are all these families, why are their kids on screens and their parents are on the phone? It's like, doesn't anyone talk anymore? And that is just being replicated. If that's what you see in public, you can also imagine what's happening inside the home.
And you know what? I don't know if you saw the research that just came out in the last couple of weeks where a large-scale survey was done of American kids. And they were basically, the kids were saying that they felt their parents spent too much time looking at screens. And they felt like their parents weren't available to them. They felt like their parents weren't listening to them. I saw this yesterday. I was in a fast food restaurant, and I saw a little boy tugging at his mom's arm, and her eyes were glued to her screen, and he kept tugging and tugging and tugging. And finally, you know, instead of putting the screen down and picking up and hugging her child, you know what she did? She picked him up, and he started looking at the screen, too.
Yeah.
And so it's part of it, it really is modeling. And I'm guessing that you and Gary both would say we need to, you know, first of all, stop and get the log out of our own eye before we start criticizing our kids. Correct.
That is absolutely right. You know, they did the study at the University of Washington with babies, and at only 42 minutes old, that baby started imitating that mom. You know, the mom would stick out the tongue, and the baby would try to stick out their tongue, and this is 42 minutes old, and our children are watching what we do much more than our rules of what we say. And there is one chapter of the book that is especially like, oh, when people read it, and it's screen time and you. And it's about how do you as the adult use the screens. Is it, you know, and I think for every adult it's good to ask if your child grew up to use screens just like you do, and that's how they would use it in their family life, in their business, with their relationship with God, would you be really happy that, wow, I did that well, I passed that on really well and, you know, very healthy to my child? And for a lot of us, it's like, ooh, I don't think I can say that. And, you know, the late Howard Hendricks has this amazing quote that you cannot impart what you do not possess. And until we as adults can say, hey, we've made peace with our technology, we know how to use it for work and for good, but we know when to put it away and when it's time to engage with people, you know, whether it's a friend over lunch and you put your screens away and you talk to each other, or whether it is at dinner with your family, it's you're on vacation, et cetera. So I think a lot of it is us, like you're saying, you know, yes, you can get a call, but a lot of times it's not urgent and you can let that go to voicemail and you look at your child instead.
Some great advice, and we're going to dive into this this new book. Again, the guest is Arlene Pelicane, and she's the co-author with Dr. Gary Chapman of Growing Up Social, Raising Relational Kids in a Screen-Driven World. We do have 5 copies of Arlene's book to give away. If you'd like to call us, give us your contact info, and at the end of the hour, we'll put you into a drawing for one of those books. The number again, 877-93-FAITH. Also, if you have a question for Arlene, maybe based on your own family's experience, call us. And we're glad to let you talk to her. 877-93-FAITH is the number. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on the Faith Radio Network.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
Welcome back. If you are listening on Faith 90.5 in Duluth, we appreciate you taking us along today. Maybe you've tuned in on Faith 1090 in Waterloo, Iowa. Maybe you're listening on our flagship station, Faith 900 in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And if so, we really appreciate you making Faith Radio part of your day. You can learn more about all of our programming by going to our website, which is myfaithradio.com. And man, there's some great resources there. I brag about this to people all the time. We talk about just wonderful articles that will just strengthen your faith, help you become more effective as an evangelist, understand Christian worldview, family life issues, you name it. Our web team has just put together some phenomenal resources. And again, sample those. Maybe this weekend when you get a few minutes, go to myfaithradio.com. My guest is Arlene Pellicane. She's the co-author of Growing Up Social, Raising Relational Kids in a Screen-Driven World. Arlene partnered with Dr. Gary Chapman of the Love Languages fame on this particular book. And Arlene, before the break, one of the things we were talking about is obviously technology has done some wonderful things for our lives and brought us closer together in some ways, you know. But I often hear people, it's almost like they're justifying it. They'll say, oh, but I can connect with old friends that I haven't seen in years through Facebook, or oh, my kids just love the YouVersion Bible app for kids, and so they just spend hours on the phone looking at the little Bible stories, or, you know, a youth pastor saying, oh, the only way I can connect with my kids is through Facebook. And all those things may be true, but sometimes I feel like thou protest too much, that people are not admitting some of the things that you brought up a few minutes ago, that in reality, especially when it comes to our family and also when it comes, frankly, to our relationships in the body of Christ, technology is more likely than not driving us apart instead of bringing us together. Am I overstating that?
I don't think you're overstating it. I think, you know, technology is definitely something that is so everywhere, you know, so it's becoming the way that we communicate. And so that is hard, because we could say, oh, let's pull back. But then, you know, they're going to be, you know, even in my child's classroom, they're giving out laptops now, and that's fourth grade, things like that. So much of the communication is that way. But nothing can replace someone looking into your eyes, someone hugging you, someone physically being present with you and talking with you. And I think if we replace, you know, if we think, oh, I already, you know, talked to someone on social media. Oh, you know, I'm caught up on my tweets and my texts, and I think socially I'm good. But then you realize I'm lonely, you know, because I need to physically go out and meet other people and physically, like, have coffee with people or pray with a person in person. So I think we just have to be careful to realize technology is the supplement, but it's to strengthen real life things that are already happening, and that we cannot substitute that for everything. And, you know, you look at these statistics and you think, wow, that a child age 8 to 18 is spending 7 hours a day on some kind of screen media. So they're watching TV. They're on a laptop, they're on a game, you know, whatever, but 7 hours a day. And you think, how many hours are you as a parent going to have before that child graduates out of your home to imprint your morals, to imprint, you know, God's word, to have a relationship together? And if 7 hours of that is spent that you guys are looking at screens, then, you know, there's not much time in the day for that relationship building. So that's really that huge caution to parents to say, wait a minute, are we relying on technology too much? Because the truth is, when your child is young, before they hit those teen years, they want to spend time with you. And if you guys are, you know, on social media and watching TV instead of spending that quality time, as they grow up, that relationship isn't there.
I was thinking about something that you just said about nothing can take the place of a touch, a hug, looking somebody in the eyes, that a real life relationship, that technology can't substitute for that. And I don't know if you heard, but at the beginning of the hour, I mentioned this little girl, little 3-year-old disabled girl from St. Paul, who was born with no arms, and she had a chance to meet the first ever armless pilot, this woman named Jessica Cox, who is a motivational speaker. She was born without arms. She just has a movie coming out called Right Footed. And so this little girl, this little 3-year-old, had a chance to meet this woman. So the little girl, Ruth Evelyn, meets Jessica Cox, the pilot, at this documentary. And the two of them shared an armless hug.
Mm.
And, it, you know, there's a beautiful photo. You can find this online. And I thought about it. They couldn't have shared a virtual hug. I mean, it just wouldn't have been this powerful moment of this little 3-year-old disabled girl and this disabled woman who will probably, this little girl probably thinking of this woman as her hero. And they shared an armless hug. You know, a tweet wouldn't have done it. A Facebook post would even a nice, you know, chat through, you know, some type of video technology. It wouldn't have been the same.
Not the same.
It troubles me when I hear so many people sort of, again, and Christians too, justifying it and saying, but it's doing so many wonderful things. And I'm not going to discount there are wonderful, beautiful things about being connected. But especially with younger kids, man, we're just seeing all this research on bonding and how kids are not bonding properly because they're plopped down in front of a screen at, I mean, these, I can't even believe some of these little, you know, high chair deals where they've got a little slot so you can stick in a, you know, some kind of a device. It's just, I'm sorry, I'm preaching here, but I get upset.
He's getting warmed up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we as people, as parents, you know, we have to realize at what price convenience, you know, that we think this is convenient. You know, I'm occupying my child while I'm shopping now. So I've given my 12-month-old, my 18-month-old a tablet so they can look around and I can shop in peace. But what are we trading off? We are trading off that little sweet baby to learn self-control, to learn the self-control of, oh, I sit here and I'm not supposed to scream and I'm supposed to look, you know, around and I'm not supposed to grab things and throw them off the shelf. And instead of teaching that skill of self-control, and of course that takes work, we're saying, oh, you know, just watch this. It's much easier. And so we as parents, we have to wean ourselves off of the devices and allow our child to exercise that self-control. And it's harder work for us, but it obviously builds a much stronger child for them. You know, there's statements, you know, that I hear, things like the people skills are atrophying in children because they're not used. Because instead of using it, okay, I have to look up, I need to shake someone's hand, I need to ask, and what is your name? And, oh, nice to meet you. You know, it used to be, of course, that every child knew these common courtesies. And now, you know, if your child looks at an adult right away and shakes their hand and says, nice to meet you, that other parent will think, what are you doing to your child? I can't even get my child to look up from their screen, you know, let alone to meet a stranger, you know. And so these common people skills, these skills, emotional skills that a child needs to have, we talk about them in the book as A-plus skills, being able to anger management, attention, to pay attention, appreciation, to show appreciation. These are skills that children need, but they're not getting because of screen time. So it's really important for parents to say, I want my child emotionally to be ready, and that means not putting a little screen in the shopping cart, on the high chair, in the car, but teaching them this is how you manage your emotions.
I think some of the best evidence I've heard at the change that we're seeing in children's relational skills comes from teachers, because I've talked to several, you know, 30-year teachers who have been in the classroom, and I've asked them, I've said, what kind of changes have you seen in your students? And this is, you know, it's public schools or even Christian schools, a cross section of the general public here, and they, without exception, every one of them will say, oh man, attention spans, they can't sit still, they don't look you in the eye, they don't know how to have a conversation, they don't know how to talk to a friend. The high schoolers don't know how to ask somebody out, they have to do it by texting, and they have to dump their boyfriend by texting. I mean, it's I'm starting to just really wonder if, as a society, and I think you and Gary have pointed this out in the book, there are now academics, there are now researchers, sociologists, psychologists who are starting to say, hey, we're noticing some stuff here that kind of concerns us. So what are you reading? What are you reading on that?
Yeah, well, for sure, you know, they did this study about college empathy, that people, college students today are 40% less empathetic than they were 20 years ago. And this was done at the University of Michigan. And, you know, you look at this and it makes sense. You know, if I fell on a college campus 20 years ago, someone might have been, oh, are you okay? Let me help you up. Are you all right? If I fell today on a college campus, one, no one would notice because everyone's looking down at their phones. Two, someone would take my picture and post on social media, look at this funny lady that fell on her tush, you know, and they'd post it and they'd walk away. way, because our culture, you know, what does it teach you? It's just about, you know, what's funny, what's in that moment, what can I share, what is this, you know, can I post this, can I put this on Instagram, instead of saying, what really happened and does that person need help? And obviously on social media, it's much easier to say mean things when you don't even see the person on the other side of it. And so there's all that. And of course, we talked about attention earlier, and they show that, you know, since the year 2000, that our attention span is down 40%. And it's, you know, you link that with all of our mobile phones and our apps and our quick, we want everything quick. And when it's not quick and instant, and when we don't have five choices, we say, oh, this isn't working, and we get out. And that happens in the classroom. You know, my children don't play video games. They read. Imagine that. And I don't say that, you know, people always look at me like, well, that's nice, Arlene, you have readers. But that is built in, that from the time they were very small, it's like, no, we don't play video games, we read books. And what do they get used to? Their normal is reading books, and that's their default activity. When there's free time, my son is 10 years old. His favorite book is The Boys in the Boat, which is a, you know, a New York Times bestseller. It's an adult read. It's his very all-time favorite book. He just picks books up and he just reads them. And that, I say that to say, you can raise your children differently and it is okay. And they will thrive. And when it's time to learn technology, they can learn it. I can take my son, and in 5 hours, I'm sure he could learn a video game. But I cannot take a 10-year-old that's been on video games all their life and in 5 hours teach them how to read a 200-page book. Because there was this study done that in 5 hours, they rewired these novices to have the same brains as the internet people that had been experts all the time. And in just 5 hours of internet use, their brains followed the expert user. So it's very easy. Sometimes the argument is, oh, our children will be left behind. But believe me, you've seen them. Everything's getting easier and easier to use. You give your child whatever device you're wondering if they'll be able to use, and I'm sure in 5 hours they could pick it up.
Yeah.
But they cannot learn these emotional skills of, oh, this is how you greet a person. This is how you apologize. This is how, you know, you ask for something. These are things that they've got to learn over practice in real life.
I'm curious. I know you live in San Diego. Is your husband a San Diego Chargers fan?
You know, we are not big sports people. I know I'm losing like half of you. And we have, my husband's born in New York, and we're kind of transplants to San Diego. So we will say go Chargers with everyone else, but we own no Charger memorabilia at all. So that kind of tells you something.
Well, here's the reason I asked that, because I was thinking about how this applies to adults as well. I don't know if you're familiar with this this thing on, I think it's on ESPN, or it's a special channel. It's called NFL Red Zone.
Okay.
And NFL Red Zone. This is where this rubber meets the road for adults as well, especially guys. Okay. Now, in the past, in the distant past, you actually went to a football game and you sat in the stands and you watched the plays from a distance.
Right.
Now, of course, on Sunday, you have your choice of wonderful NFL games. And here in the upper Midwest, we can watch the Vikings, we can watch the Packers, or whatever your favorite team is. And there are some channels where you can just, you know, sample them all. Well, Red Zone, what Red Zone is, it's just basically showing you the key plays inside the Red Zone. Coming up to getting a touchdown. And what they're doing is on, you know, they just quickly switch from game to game to game to game to game so you can catch the exciting action. And you don't have to sit through the boring march down the field.
Right.
And I was thinking, how is that conditioning, let's just say men, husbands, to say, you know, instant gratification. Boy, I don't want to, I'm not going to sit there and watch a 3.5 hour NFL game. I got to see just the highlights. So even for adults, I think maybe we're being rewired without us even realizing it.
Yeah. Yeah, that life has to be very exciting, very fast, and you go from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. And then when your relationship is a little bit boring, you say, well, this isn't going very well. When your child's sitting in school, this isn't going very well. And that is a concern, because there is a place for boredom in our lives as adults, you know, and in our children's lives, for us to be able to realize that is also a rhythm of life. And many times it's when we're bored and when we're quiet, it's when we might get a great idea. or we might hear from God. You know, I love Dr. Chapman says, for every child, there's a place for them just to have a bucket of water and a stick, and for them just to run that thing around. And you know what? There's no time in childhood today for a bucket of water and a stick. You know, today it'd be like, what do I do with that? I'm out of here. 2 seconds later, you know, and they're playing their game or something. And so I think it's really wonderful for parents when we hear those words, I'm bored, to realize, okay, that is not the signal to give them your phone or to, oh, we've got to buy our child a tablet because they're bored. No, this is your time to say, well, you know, you can either do chores or you can figure out something to do on your own. And a lot of times, you know, kids are not having that imaginative play. They're not creating forts and games and rules and picking up, you know, games and playing soccer and, you know, all these different things, because instead all their games are done for them. It's like, here's your video game and just get to the next level, please. And so that creativity is not there. And so I think it's really a gift for your children to be bored, and for us as adults not to be afraid of that either, so that we can sit through things and still enjoy them.
Wow, really well said. Our guest is Arlene Pelicane, and Arlene's book, which is just out recently with Gary Chapman, is called Growing Up Social, Raising Relational Kids in a Screen-Driven World. We have 5 copies of that book to give away at the end of the hour. And if you call us right now, we'll put your name into a drawing for one of those copies. And if you're a mom or dad, a grandma or grandpa, maybe a youth pastor, if what Arlene is saying resonates with you, this book would be a great book to add to your bookshelf. Again, 877-93-FAITH is the number. Call us right now. And if you have a question for Arlene, we'd love to hear from you as well. 877-93-FAITH. This is the Faith Radio Network.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
Our guest today is Arlene Pelicane. She is the co-author of Growing Up Social, Raising Relational Kids in a Screen-Driven World. Her website, if you want to check out Arlene's writings and her speaking schedule, Arlene Pelicane, PELLICANE.com, ArlenePelicane.com. And actually, Arlene has a brand new book just released today. Moms, check this out, 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Mom. You can do it, and Arlene can help you with her new book. Okay, Arlene, in the remaining time that we have, let's talk about some of the practical solutions and suggestions that you and Dr. Gary Chapman, lay out in this particular book. First of all, you mentioned some of the A-plus relational skills that are critical for kids to learn. What are those skills, and how do we teach them?
Yes, I'll give each skill and then kind of like one practical thing with it. One is affection. So it's showing real life affection, not just like this little text that says, love you. But so the real life application there would be hug your child, tell them I love you, say that over and over to them so that they learn to do the same. The second A-plus skill is appreciation, and this is that skill that says, I'm really grateful to have this. So what this means is when your child asks you to buy them an electronic device, you don't go buy it the week after and say, okay, here you go, we know everyone else has one of these. No, no, you wait. And you help them to show the skill of appreciation by letting them wait for a birthday, for Christmas, have them save up for it so that everything isn't so instant. Show them how to appreciate things, make them more grateful. And believe it or not, waiting for things obviously makes you more grateful for them. The third skill is anger management. And this is this whole deal that, of course, your child is going to get angry. You are going to get angry. But instead of just, you know, one restaurant owner said they saw this, that when brothers and sisters fought at the table, which they always do, they used to have to work it out. But now mom just whips out her screens and everybody just starts playing games and no one ever resolves what they were angry about. And I think this happens in relationships. So instead of resorting to distractions or to screens, when your children get angry, work that out. Teach them the difference of good anger, bad anger, and the book will go into that more so. Attention is another skill. How can you have your child pay attention? And you can begin at the dinner table, that at the dinner table there are no screens. Whether we're out at a restaurant or we are at home, we won't have the TV on the background. We won't answer the phone unless we are really anticipating something where we have to go pick someone up. But we are going to pay attention to one another, and we're going to start at the dinner table. And then the other one is apology. Do you know how to apologize? And this is done in real life, that when we mess up as parents, we don't just say sorry, but we look at our child in the eye and we say, you know what, mommy just yelled at you, and I was stressed and I was frustrated, but it was not right for mommy to raise her voice at you, and I'm very sorry for raising my voice at you. Will you please forgive me? Okay, very good. Let's go on. You know, but you model that apology, and with your teenagers, you do it in real life, and you don't just text them back and forth.
Great, great ideas. Arlene, we had a caller named David who asked a question because you were talking about the importance of reading earlier, and I don't know if this is something that you want to tackle or not, but he said, do you have any suggestion of books to help young boys between 8 to 12 years of age grow spiritually?
Yeah, it's a great question. Obviously, the Bible, which he obviously knows. You know, YWAM Publishing has this series of books of biographies, and they're all like heroes of the faith. There are some that are American heroes like George Washington, and then there are people like Corrie ten Boom. And I know for my son, reading that biography about Corrie ten Boom really shaped him a lot during those ages. So things like that, I think biographies are fantastic for boys and for girls because it shows them the heroic and it shows them what it means to have courage, and boys are really into that.
Great, great suggestions. Okay, how does a parent deal with a preteen or teen, especially let's say a boy who is addicted to video games or his mobile device, and they're trying to limit the amount of time, and it's a constant battle. And, you know, I hear from parents every day, and they say it's driving a wedge between them and their 13-year-old or 14-year-old over this issue. So where do you start?
That is a hard question, isn't it? I think you start on your knees. You are praying for that child. You're praying for softness in your relationship. And then you have to remember, I'm not supposed to be my son's best friend or my daughter's best friend. I am supposed to be their parent. And if it means I am unpopular for a few years, I will be unpopular for a few years. I have heard so many times parents who have done this, who they've limited the screens, and then their children have said, everyone else gets to have a phone. How come you take my devices away at night? Blah, blah, blah. But later, when they're in their 20s and they look back, they tell their parents, thank you so much for being strict. I heard these teenagers, you know, and one home has really strict rules about screen usage, like, you know, 1 hour a day and that's it. And another home, it, no rules at all. And the no rules at all girl said to the rules girl, you know, I wish my parents cared for me as much as your parents cared for you, you know, when she had him over for dinner. So I think as parents, we can feel like, oh, our kids hate us. We're so mean. We take away their phones. We tell them they can only have one social media account instead of five like their other friends. We tell them they can't use this and they can't use this. But the thing is that if you are doing it with this purpose of loving them and protecting them, and, you know, and also we do have to have this opinion like they're going to grow up to be adults. So we also need to be shepherding them and also backing off as they get older. But I think if we have the funnel smaller when they're younger, it's much easier to back off as they get older and give them more freedom with their choices. So we do need to raise them to make these independent choices on their own so that when they leave our home, they're not like, finally, I get to use a phone, you know. But that we've been teaching them when they're tweens and they're teens, these are good uses, these are bad uses, let's talk about it. And sometimes it might mean, you know, you did that poorly. The text that you sent was inappropriate, and because of that, we're going to take away your phone for the weekend. And, you know, that may be terrible for them, but that's an okay thing to do. Those disciplines are good.
We just got about 90 seconds left, Arlene, and this is one of the questions that I never seem to be able to answer effectively. And hey, I'm a child psychologist. I should know this stuff, but I don't. I'm constantly asked, what is the proper age for a child to be given a cell phone?
That's a great question.
And so
like
what is your opinion? We'll say Dr. Chapman. We'll let him be the expert.
I'm going to put him on. I'll put him on the line.
Okay.
So Dr. Chapman will say, you ask the question, what is the cell phone for? And then you talk about, okay, is it for safety? Okay, so is this really the best? If it's for safety, then you get the simple phone that can just text and that's it. And maybe you only limit it to, it can only call three numbers. Because for safety, that's really all you need, to be able to call your mom, to be able to call your dad, to be able to call your aunt, you know, or whatever. So you ask, what is this phone for? Because many times the phone is not for a necessary thing, right? It is for something that's totally unnecessary. And it's shown as, oh, well, it's to be safe. But it's funny, my husband, you know, he grew up always, of course, going home from school by himself, no phone for years. And he's like, I turned out just fine. So sometimes the safety is in not giving your child the phone and just letting them walk home because there's so many things that the phone entails.
Yeah, and of course our media has scared us half to death that there's, you know, a Somali pirate around every corner ready to grab our children. So, Arlene, thank you.
Push back that time as much as possible with that phone.
Great. Some great advice, and I know we've got so much more in this book that I will recommend to our listeners. Once again, it's called Growing Up Social, Raising Relational Kids in a Screen-Driven World. Arlene Pelicane and Dr. Gary Chapman have co-authored this book. Thank you, Arlene, so much for your time today. May the Lord continue to bless you in your work and your ministry.
Thank you so much, Bill.
That wraps things up for today. This is the Faith Radio Network. I pray that you have a wonderful weekend. Coming up next, it's Neil Stavem's weekend edition of Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.